Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Israel Unplugged. This is Rabbi Moshe Lichtman, your host for today. Our regular host, Josh Wander, is busy helping Klal Yisrael, helping the Jewish people. He's at the site of the building collapse in Holon and doing what he does. So I'll be spending the time with you this hour. We have a great show planned. And as always, just to remind you what this show is all about, we are here to bring you the unadulterated facts of where we are holding in the redemptive process, focusing primarily on the ingathering of the exiles. No spit, no spin, no twist, just facts on the ground. And actually today we are going to speak specifically about that for the most part. Just to remind you, you should visit our websites when you have a chance. My website is toratzion.com, T-O-R-A-T-Zion, Z-I-O-N.com, where you can find my books and other things. And also, you can visit Josh Wander's website. There's a lot of ways to get to it. The way I remember is israeltorah.org.il. It's also Bring Them Home and something else I don't remember, but it's a great website with videos and all type of information and tools about the importance of living in Israel, about Aliyah. You should really, really look at the video series of great rabbis who of our generation who are calling on the Jewish people to come back to Israel. I want to remind you that this is a live show, and we'd love to hear your input. So if you are in North America, please call us on 301-768-4841. That's 301-768-4841. And if you are lucky enough to be in the Holy Land in Eretz Yisrael, call us on at 02-650-0151. So as I told you, as I said, we are going to have a great show. Stick with us.
Hello, I am Walter Bingham. If you want to hear the news behind the news and the true perspective on world affairs, then the Walter Bingham File is the program for you. We bring you interviews with the movers and shakers, political commentaries, and on-the-spot reports of events as they happen. All here every Tuesday, 4 p.m. Israel time, 9 a.m. Eastern time. And it's all archived on our website. Make it a date.
Welcome back to Israel Unplugged, and as I told you, we're going to be discussing the topic that really is the raison d'etre of our show. Our show is supposed to be discussing the redemption, the redemptive process that we believe very strongly we are in the middle of. So I want to read to you something that I got in a WhatsApp. It was in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak Ginsburg. Rabbi Yitzchak Ginsburg is a big Kabbalist, and he said as follows. In Hebrew, the word Adam is Adam, right? The first person who ever lived, right? Is an acronym for Adam. The Aleph, the first letter, stands for Adam. Dalid, the second letter, stands for David, which is King David. And the mem, the N, the last letter, stands for Mashiach. Thus we see that King David is the midpoint of history. In other words, if we take the word Adam, which really Adam represents mankind because he was the first and, you know, only man created directly by God. And he represents all of mankind. And therefore, if we take his name and we say that it goes from Aleph, Adam, to Dalit, to King David, and then to Mashiach, we must assume that King David is the midpoint of history. The beginning of King David's reign over the entire nation of Israel in Jerusalem was in the year 2891. Now, I don't know where he knows that from, but I know that we do know. We do have a book called Sefer, slipped my mind, but there is a book that goes through all the different Seder Olam. That's what it's called, Seder Olam, the order of the world, which is basically goes through the history of the world. And so it's very easy to find out when King David reigned over the entire nation of Israel and Jerusalem, and that was in the year 2891. So if that is the midpoint of history, so Adam was created in, you know, year zero, the first day, right? Or actually before the first day started. King David was in 2891. So we can calculate another 2,891 years, and we reach our new year, which is 5782. 2891 times 2 is 5782. That is the new Hebrew year that we just started a few days ago on Rosh Hashanah. And that means that Mashiach, the Mem, the end of the word Adam, is going to come this year. This is the year of the coming of Mashiach. Now, why am I bringing this to you? Because I want to discuss this issue of making predictions about when Mashiach is going to come. You see, I read it and I was so excited. I was so like, wow, you know, I really hope that this is true. And it's such a beautiful idea that David is the midpoint of history and Mashiach is the end. And it really excites me, and it really gets me, ready for the coming of Mashiach. But on the other hand, I've been in this situation many times before. I've been convinced even. I've been certainly very excited for the imminent coming of the Messiah, and unfortunately, he hasn't come yet. And specifically, I know right now, or yesterday, the American people commemorated 20 years since the attacks on 9/11 on the World Trade Center and other places. Now, I remember the attacks very clearly. I remember where I was. I was here in Israel, but I remember when it happened. And I remember all these different sources coming out about how this is definitely going to be, this is the beginning of the war that it is supposed to usher in the Messiah. In fact, there is a very explicit Talmudic source which says that the seventh year, that the Messiah is supposed to come in the seventh year. Seventh year meaning a Shemitah year, which for all those of you who know, this year is another Shemitah year. Twin Tower attacks, 9/11, happened right after a Shemitah year. So the Gemara says that Mashiach is going to come in the seventh year. And the Talmud itself asks, but wait a second. There's another Talmudic statement that says he's going to come in the eighth year. So make up your mind. Is it going to come in the seventh year, meaning in a Shemitah year, or is it going to be a sabbatical year, that is, Shemitah is sabbatical, or is it going to be in the year after the sabbatical year? And the Talmud answers that war is also considered the beginning of redemption, which means that there will be a war in a Shemitah year, and then in the year right afterwards, there is going to be Mashiach is actually going to come. And I think I might be mistaken, but I think that it might have actually even been that the year of 9/11 was also a Shemitah year. Trying to figure out if that's possible because it was 20 years ago and not 21. It could be that it was a Shemitah year. And therefore, I was like so excited. This is it. There's a war, a tremendous war starting. And it's all a sign. It's all exactly what our rabbis said. And you know what? I even told my students, get ready. The Messiah is coming any day. And of course, we know that he didn't come. And it's therefore very dangerous to take these kind of signs and you know, really believe in them to the point where, you know, your whole being relies on it and believes in it, and as if this has to happen. Because then when it doesn't happen, there can be a great disappointment, and it could cause people to lose their faith. And we all know what happened in the time of Shabtai Tzvi, whose bones should rot. We consider him to be one of the biggest Rishayim, most wicked people in Jewish history. He caused many, many Jews to leave the faith because he claimed that he was the Messiah. And in the end, he ended up converting to Islam. So there you go. Many Jews were very disappointed about that. They really were hanging their hopes on him, and it didn't happen. And we have to be very, very careful about this. In fact, the rabbis already tell us that it is forbidden, actually forbidden, to make these calculations. The way the rabbis say it, I'll quote it to you, is, may those who reckon the end of days perish, or the way it says is their bones should rot. It's a very dangerous thing. On the other hand, I think things are different. I think that our times might be a little bit different. And what do I mean? I've quoted this many, many, many times, and I'll quote it again, and I'll quote it 1,000 more times because it is one of the most important sources for us to remember today in our day and age. Rabbi Arya Kaplan, who was a great, great rabbi who unfortunately died very young at the age of 48 in the year 1980 or 81, and he wrote a book called The Real Messiah, in which he refutes Christian missionaries. But after many chapters doing that, he says, okay, so what's the real Messiah going to be like? And in that chapter, he writes the following few sentences. Other generations have expected the Messiah's imminent arrival based on the forced interpretation of one or two prophecies. The forced interpretation, right? Shabtai Tzvi was able to get people to believe in him because of something like that, because of forced interpretation of one or two prophecies. He didn't have more than that. Whereas, continues Rav Arya Kaplan, whereas we are living through. Now, Rabbi Arya Kaplan wrote this in the 1980s, or 1970s, I should say. He wrote, whereas we are living through the entire range of messianic tradition. The entire range of messianic tradition, which is a statement that only someone like Rav Arya Kaplan could say because he knew the entire range of everything. He was a super genius, knew the entire Torah. And he writes, we are living through the entire range of messianic tradition, often coming to pass before our very eyes with uncanny literalness. If you keep your eyes open, you will see almost every headline bringing us one step closer to that goal. So there is a big difference. You know, when the rabbis said that one should not try to reckon the time of the end, they were saying that because it was dangerous back then. The time of the rabbis, for sure, that was 2,000 years ago. For sure, it was extremely, or 1,500, 1,600 years ago, it was extremely dangerous to do it then because, you know, who knows when it would happen, and there was so much more time left in history for it to happen. Therefore, they recommended very strongly not to do it. But it could be that in our generation, it's a little different. And I'll tell you, beautiful story about that when we get back from the break, which is gonna start in just a few seconds. So please make sure you stick with us and come back right after the break. Okay, see you soon.
Everyone, this is Andrea Simintow from Jerusalem, inviting you to drop everything and join me on my show, Pull Up a Chair. We'll visit this week's quirky stories, meet fabulous guests, and discover my Israel. Together, we'll laugh, shout, and explain the topics that make us say, hey, we've got to talk about that. So get comfortable and pull up a chair with me, Andrea Simintow, every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Israel Unplugged. So we were literally discussing the issue of predicting when the Messiah is going to come and the dangers of that. And we said that it really could be that it is not so problematic nowadays that so much of the Messianic tradition has already come to pass. I mean, think about it. We are living at a time when almost half the Jewish people live in the land of Israel. The land of Israel is flourishing again. So many signs of the ultimate redemption, as clear signs. Again, as Rabbi Kaplan said, we are living through the entire range of Messianic tradition, not just one or two prophecies, forced interpretations of one or two prophecies. So I said it could be that there's a difference in terms of this thing. So where do I get this from? So there is a beautiful story that is found in different places, but it's told over by, in the name of or about the Malbim, right? The Malbim was one of the greats of Europe in the 1800s, and he is most famous for his commentary on the entire Tanakh and the entire Bible, the Old Testament. And it's a very beautiful commentary where he just shows how much he knew and how deeply he understood the verses of the Tanakh. So the story goes like this, that in the book of Daniel, there are a lot of hints to when the Messiah will come, when the ultimate redemption will come. And supposedly in his, I say supposedly because I haven't really gotten to that yet, and I'm not sure even if I get to it, if I'll understand what he wrote. But supposedly in his commentary, he gives a prediction based on the verses when the Messiah is going to come. So he got a lot of flack for that, specifically because of what we said, that it is forbidden. It is forbidden according to the Talmud. And as I told you, the Rambam, Maimonides, brings it down. He quotes that. And therefore, how could he do such a thing? How could he predict? By the way, you should know, throughout history, great rabbis have given predictions of when the Messiah is going to come based on their understanding of various different verses. So anyway, so he got a lot of flack, and he decided instead of answering each of the people separately, he's going to answer them all in one shot and publicize a manifesto, a public letter, an open letter. And in this letter, he writes that he gives a parable. He says in his community, there was a family whose son became bar mitzvah. And the father prepared the son for the bar mitzvah, and the son did so beautifully. He gave a beautiful speech, and he read from the Torah so beautifully. And the father wanted to reward his son in some way for everything he did during his bar mitzvah time. So the father was a big businessman, and he said to his son, he said, next time I go to the marketplace in Leipzig, which was a big, big market in Germany. And that's where people would go to sell their wares. Next time I go, I'm going to take you on the trip with me, and we're going to spend time together, and you're going to see what I do, and we're going to be together. So the son was really excited, and for weeks and weeks they were preparing for this trip. And as they got closer, the preparations became more intense, and also the emotions of the man's wife, the child's mother, became also more intense, and she started crying. She was going to miss them so much. And finally, on the day of the trip, when the trip was supposed to start, they set out on their trip, and the mother was crying her eyes out that her husband and her son were going so far away, etc. So they start on their trip. And again, they brought with them a lot of stuff, a lot of food and all other provisions. And about an hour into the trip, you know, they were on horse and buggy. About an hour into the trip, the son, the 13-year-old boy, turns to his father and says, "Father, when are we going to get to Leipzig?" So the father turns to him and looks at him with the most angry look, with the most angry eyes, and doesn't even have to say a word, but just gives him such a look as if, "Don't ever ask that question again." And the son was, you know, was scared and taken aback, and he never asked that question again. 1 week goes by. A few more days go by. And finally, at the end of the second week, the father turns to the wagon driver and he says, "Yankel, when are we going to get to Leipzig?" And the son is besides himself. He says, "I don't understand, Father. I asked that question and you looked at me as if I did the worst sin in the world. And now you ask the very same question. How could that be?" And what did the father answer? He said, "Son, my dear son, I see that you don't understand. You see, you saw all the preparations that went into this trip. You saw how much your mother cried when we were leaving. Did you really think it was going to be a 2-hour journey? After 1 hour that we're on our trip, you're already asking me when are we going to get there? That's ridiculous. But it's already, we've been traveling already 2 weeks. We are actually close to Leipzig. And therefore, now there is nothing wrong with asking, when are we going to get to Leipzig?" And the mashal that the Malbim continues and explains, the parable, the explanation is, he says, you know, when the rabbis saw all the words of the prophets and all the lamentations and you know, everything that the prophets write about the exile that is going to happen to the Jewish people, the rabbis understood that this is going to be a really long one. It's not going to be like the first one. It's not going to be 70 years. This is going to be a really, really long one. And therefore, they were afraid that if people are going to start figuring out when the Messiah is going to come, they are going to be quite disappointed. And they're going to lose faith. They're going to say, according to my calculation, it's going to happen in another 1,200, 500, 2,000 years. And they're going to lose all hope. So why should I live? Why should I continue living if I know that the Messiah is not going to come in my days? And I'm going to have to suffer in exile for all these years. And me and my children, my grandchildren, my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandchildren. Why should I continue? So therefore, the rabbi said, anybody who tries to figure out when the Messiah is going to come, let him rot. Let his bones rot. That is a terrible thing to do. However, says the Malbim, we are already at the end of days. Let's not forget that the rabbis tell us that the world as we know it will only exist for 6,000 years. We are now in the year 5782 at the very least, okay? If anybody understands what I mean, there might be a few missing years here and there, but let's ignore that. Even if it's 5782, the 6,000 years are coming to a close. And when the Malbim said this, it was 100 years ago. Well, let's say even a little bit more, 150 years ago. But to him, that was already close. We're close to Leipzig. We're close to the time of the ultimate redemption. And therefore, there's nothing wrong with nowadays trying to figure out when the Messiah is going to come. Of course, it is still dangerous to talk about specific times, specific dates, because, and if it doesn't happen, people might lose their faith. But on the other hand, maybe not, because things are still moving. Things are still moving on towards the ultimate redemption. Things are happening. It's not like 1,000, 2,000 years ago when we were just in the dead of the exile. Now we are back in our land. So many things are happening. But we still definitely have to be careful and take every such prediction with a grain of salt. No doubt about it. We have to take it with a grain of salt. It might not come, but on the other hand, it is good to give us some hope. And on that point, I want to quote for you. I'd like to quote for you what the Rambam has to say, what Maimonides has to say on this issue. So he, in Hilchot Melachim, the Laws of Kings, he gives his own scenario, not dates, but he says, you know, what he thinks from, based on the verses, what he thinks the order of things is going to be. And then he says, nevertheless, the order of occurrence and the details of these things are not fundamental to our faith. And one should really not engage in matters of Agadah, which is the homiletic passages of rabbinic literature, nor spend too much time on the midrashic statements made in regard to these and similar issues. One should not give them primacy, for they do not, and listen very closely, this is a line I want to discuss. Why shouldn't one give them primacy? For they do not bring a person to fear or love of God. In addition, one should not calculate the time of the end of days, because the sages said, as I quoted before, may those who reckon the end of days perish. Rather, one should wait and believe in the general idea, as we have explained. So we don't have that much time till the end of this segment, so I'm not going to get into it. But right after, when we get back from the break, I want to discuss that line that the Rambam said, that Maimonides said, one should not give them primacy, for they do not bring a person to fear or love of God. Okay, so please stick with us, and we'll continue this when we get back.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator, and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On The Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Israel Unplugged, and we have been having a beautiful conversation about the coming of Messiah, about predicting when he's going to come, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, and the difference between the olden days and nowadays. It could be that nowadays it's not such a bad thing to do. But then we quoted, at the end of the last segment, we quoted Maimonides, who says that one should not give such statements of the rabbis that talk about the coming of the Messiah, should not give them primacy, meaning should not make them the main focus, for they do not bring a person to fear or love of God. Now, I agree. If doing such things does not bring a person to fear or love of God, then it should be abandoned, and people should not pay attention to it and should not spend a lot of time in it, because if anything, as we discussed before, it'll just frustrate people. It will possibly cause, God forbid, people to leave the faith and not believe in the words of the rabbis, because, you know, Messiah's not coming yet, and, you know, people said that he's supposed to come already, et cetera, et cetera. But I believe very strongly that one has to take the Rambam, the Maimonides' words, you know, with a grain of salt, because he himself says the reason you shouldn't do it is because it does not bring a person to fear or love of God. But what if it does? What if we are living at a time when talking about these kinds of things makes a person try to be better and try to fear God more and love God more? I don't know about you. I don't know about anybody out there. But to me, when I hear statements like I started today's show with, by Rabbi Yitzchak Ginsburg, that says that it's possible, according to this idea of Adam, of Adam, and then David, and then Messiah, Mashiach, that they're equidistant from each other, that this year might be the year of the ultimate redemption when the Messiah himself arrives, it makes me fear God and love God more. It adds to my fear of God. It makes me a better Jew, because I want to be around for when the Messiah comes. I want to be privileged to be here when the Messiah comes, and I want to better myself so that I can be privileged to be here and to reap the benefits and, you know, eat the fruits, so to say, of my toil, and see the miracles and the great events that are going to happen here in the land of Israel when the Messiah arrives and when God reveals himself to the Jewish people, to the world, actually, of course, to the entire world, and shows them that he is really, truly the God of Israel. And as he has saved us so many times before in history, he will save us once again, as he promised. So to me, I think that today is different. I think maybe in the days of the Rambam, it really is true that it did not bring a person to fear of God or love of God. Why would it? Someone talks about, you know, someone learns all these statements of the rabbis about the coming of the Messiah. For example, he'll read that, you know, when the land starts flourishing, that is the clearest sign of the ultimate redemption, which we've discussed many times on this show, right? So a person in the days of the Rambam who lived in the 1200s will say, well, that's certainly not happening right now. Nothing like that. Nothing even close to that is happening right now. The land of Israel is totally desolate. So what's that going to help me? Right? He has nothing to look forward to. And when he reads the verses in the Tanakh about the ingathering of the exiles, he says, well, I don't see any of that happening. So it gets him upset, and it does not bring him closer to God and fear God and love God more. But in our day and age, when we see these things actually coming true, coming to fruition before our very eyes, it has to make a person a better Jew. It has to make him fear God and love God more, because he sees that God is actually fulfilling his word. I mean, what else is it? God promised us thousands of years ago through his prophets that, forget about the prophets, we just read it in 2 weeks ago's Parsha, about, you know, even if you're scattered ones that are at the ends of the world, God will gather you in, right? And we talked about that it's verse number 5708, and in the year 5708 is when we regained sovereignty over our land, and the Jewish people were allowed to return to the land once again. The ingathering of the exiles started, where almost half the Jewish people living in the land of Israel once again. I mean, this is the greatest opportunity in our day and age to fear God and to love God by recognizing what he has been doing for the redemption of the Jewish people in the last 150 so some odd years. So I believe that even according to the Rambam, there is no problem of spending time on these kind of issues. I still think, of course, one has to be very careful when, you know, trying to make predictions or thinking that You know, he saw something and therefore it's got to be, this is, has to be. Again, as I told you before, right after 9/11, I was friendly with a certain great rabbi, really great rabbi, who's very, very knowledgeable in Kabbalah. And he was pretty convinced that this was the ultimate redemption, which, again, it probably was and is, and we're still in the midst of it. But it didn't happen right away, right? So I was all excited. And, you know, I think I am strong enough in my belief in God that I'm not going to lose faith if it doesn't turn out exactly as the prediction, you know, was given. But it doesn't matter. You have to be careful. You certainly have to be careful and take every such prediction with a grain of salt. But on the other hand, take that prediction and say, wow, you know what? Maybe this is going to be the year. Maybe God is going to redeem us, and let it increase your fear of God and your love of God and bring you closer to Hashem. I mean, think about it. We're about to come upon Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and just pay attention. We did this already also in Rosh Hashanah. A lot of the prayers are the same. There was so much in the prayers about God redeeming the Jewish people. Maloch al kol ha'olam kulo b'chvodecha. We ask God, please, to reign over all of the world and to basically show his kingship to the whole world, show the truth of the Torah and of his word and the Jewish people to the entire world. And we have to pay attention to this. And again, at the same time, try to match it up with what's happening in our own day and age. So much of the prophecy is being fulfilled. So we can't just ignore it. If we ignore it, we are, I believe, really in for a big surprise and a terrible punishment from God for refusing to recognize and thank God for what he has done for us so far. I remember once I was teaching a class, and I taught about the fact that, you know, the world is 6,000 years, and, you know, by that time the Messiah has to come. And a girl raised her hand and she said, "Rabbi, what's going to happen if the year 6,000 comes and the Mashiach is not here yet?" So I thought for a moment. And, you know, when you're a teacher, very often you get what's called siyata dishmai. You get divine assistance. And I believe it was a divine assistance that God helped me answer this question. And I said, you know what? If you would have asked me that question 100 years ago, certainly 500 years ago, you know, we're sitting in a class and I'm talking to you about the Messiah, and you said, what if 6,000 come? I would have said, you know what? I believe that it's going to happen. I have total faith. But I wouldn't have really been able to answer the question. Because I just would have said, I have total faith that, you know, if the rabbis say it, so it's going to happen. But nowadays, we don't have to just rely on faith. So much of it has already happened. So much of messianic tradition is coming to pass before our very eyes with uncanny literalness, as Rabbi Arya Kaplan said. So it's not a question anymore if he's going to come by the year 6,000. Of course he's going to come by the year 6,000. So much, we're already so far into the process. So much has already been fulfilled. So I have no doubt that he'll come by the year 6,000. I don't have to worry what's going to happen if the year 6,000 comes and the Messiah is not here. He will be here without a doubt. I have no doubt about it, simply because of what has already happened in the last 100, 150 years. If we're talking about predictions, so I want to just share with you. So when we were 2 weeks ago, we were reading the Haftorah, right? The part from the prophets that we read after the Torah reading. So we came across a pasuk that says, I think I lost the pasuk. I lost the verse. It says, here it is. Ki yom nakam bilibi, a day of vengeance is in my heart. God says, ushnat geuli ba'a, the year of my redemption, geulai, of my redemption, is coming. So I said to myself, wow, we have a verse in Tanakh that says, shnat geulai, the year of my redemption. So I said to myself, wow, I got to try to figure out if in those words is a hint to when the Messiah is going to come. So I did the gematria, right? I figured out the numerical value of the words shnat geulai, And I was hoping it's going to come to 5782, but you know what? It didn't. It came to the year 5800. 5800. So even if that's true, Ezrat Hashem, God willing, I'll still hopefully be alive. I'll be 75 years old. It's in the year, I figured it out, it's in the year 2040. That's only 19 years from now. So either way you look at it, we have to understand and recognize that we are living in special times and thank God for it and look forward to his salvation. Thank you for your time, for giving me your time today, and we'll see you again in the near future.
If you love Israel News Talk Radio, then you'll love our Facebook page. We keep you up to date on what's happening in Israel, plus little surprise treasures that we don't share on the radio. Go now to follow us on Facebook. Just look for the Israel News Talk Radio Facebook page, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us by clicking on the like button. We post great stuff there that you'll want to share. Israel News Talk Radio on Facebook and Israel News Radio on Twitter.
If you're hearing this message, everyone else can too. Advertise with Israel News Talk Radio and get your message out to people. We'll build a personalized package for you. Contact advertising at israelnewstalkradio.com.
Straight talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Jake in Anchorage, Alaska, and I love listening to all the super interesting interviews and up-to-date information on what's happening in Israel.
Hello, this is Anna King, originally from London, now living in Israel. And what can I say? Israel News Talk Radio is my cup of tea.
My name is Bhaskar, I'm from India, and I love listening because you get to know the truth and wonderful voices from this lovely country.
Mom! Okay, wait a minute.
Hi, this is Chava Dats, and I'm calling from the rolling hills of Maale Adumim, just north of Jerusalem. I always listen to Israel News Talk Radio to get all the latest news and commentary and to keep me up to date every day.
This is Sarah Dats from Maale Adumim, and I'm 12. I wish Israel News Talk Radio was boring so my mom wouldn't listen to it all the time. Mom!
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.